My name is Ellen Jacobs. I'm a professor of history at the University of Quebec and a member of the organizing committee for a lesbian and gay history conference in Montreal planned for the 13th to the 15th of November, 1992. And with me in CKUT's studio today is...
Diane Heffernan. I am a video maker at La Réseau Vidéel. I have been making videos for the past 20 years on the feminist movement, mainly in Montreal, and also on the lesbian community. May I start by saying, regarding the 1992 Imagination, they want to do a retrospective of my work and Suzanne Vertu's work. They are going to do a retrospective of our videos of Réseau Vidéel. At the time, doing workshop to initiate women who were working at the film board, but they were secretaries and they were women who did not have access to production. Worked with them to produce videos, and then came the International Women's Year 1975, and you know, we got money to do this project, and then we organized the first woman festival, a video festival in Montreal in 1975 at Le Vidéographe. And this was the very first in Montreal of any type of women, you know, visuals or films. There had never been a festival. And we had organized it and invited mainly women that had done video throughout Canada. And we got a grant from Canada Council. And so women from, you know, Toronto, Vancouver, New Brunswick, all over Canada came. And when we met them, we had workshops and we had the table ronde together and we discussed a lot what it was to do video in different parts of Canada. And the idea arose then about the idea of doing networking together. Réseau, the word in English, means network. And we wanted to sort of create a network of women doing video, and there was also the phenomenon in the States, video letters, feminists there were sending tapes as letters of what events was happening and to keep in touch of what was happening in activist activities. And so that's how the idea of, well, it didn't work out that well because there's always the cultural problem and the language problem between Quebec and other provinces. But we still think in terms of networking with other people. And so we did women things, I would say 74. But my first video, I must come back though, because my first video in 1972 was on the first center, a women's center in Montreal that was on Montana Street, and it was called Québécoise Debout, which was a poster that is in many people's memory. The beginning, it was like the beginning of the feminist movement in Quebec. And then I, Suzanne and I, when we started doing videos with women, at one point someone did an interview in La Presse, and the first bookstore, women's bookstore, saw the article on us and asked us to come and cover their first anniversary. And that's where it all started. That's where we met the community, the feminist community. And what we did, there was a whole week of, you know, workshop and talks and conferences, and we began to really get acquainted. And then we filmed all that for hours and hours. I think we filmed 50 hours of that week. And then at the end, we thought it would be fun to do a collective of editing, like just not Suzanne and I, but like all the women who were interested. And so we yelled out, whoever wants to work with us, come to our house, and we gave the address. And for months, there were like, you know, 20, 25 women who would come and edit the first video we did on the bookstore. And strangely enough, it was like 25 lesbians. So we met the first 25 lesbians who were like activists. And so it began after that first week, the lesbians got our, and then we were together editing something that was more or less feminist. There was a bit of statement of the few lesbians that did identify as lesbian and did talk about themselves, but very few. We were all very closeted. We were all calling ourselves women loving women and women identified, and the word lesbian was still something that shocked us, or we just didn't dare say. But then when we, at the end of that week, at the beginning of that week, you know, it, we decided that we needed a space, a lesbian space, and so the co-op was born at the beginning of 1977. We set it up, and also another Maison des Femmes that was run all by a lesbian, and then it became apparent that there was a lesbian movement then.
And Tiane, let me stop you. You were referring to the co-op lesbienne, right?
Yes, yeah. Well, it was called co-op femme again, you see, in 77. We weren't saying things like, we weren't clearly, because in fact, we were involved in the feminist movement, and so therefore, it was always women, and lesbian were inclusive. And it's much later, you'll see, as I go through the history a bit of what we did, that we identify as lesbian. But we identify as lesbian as we become separatists from the feminist movement, in fact.
Let me, just in passing, in the conference, we've already had two sets of papers proposed for doing the sign of relationship lesbian and feminism in Quebec and Montreal in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Two different papers, so... you'll be able to give us the visuals as you described the various videos. Yeah. But it's we've had two strong proposals, so it's obvious that other people are reflecting on this. Plus, the Québécoise de Butte, it was the name of a became the name of a journal.
Yeah, well, Le Centre des Femmes had a journal, the first journal, feminist journal, I would say. That existed in Quebec, that was called Québécoise de Butte, and it was a very, very strong poster where there was the map of Quebec and there was a woman in the middle of it, like a naked woman with her fist up, and it was like identified, it was like a nationalist poster, and it was a slogan that was so strong, because in those days we would say il n'y a pas de Québec libre sans le féministe, and you know, so it was like there were no Quebec you know, without feminism, and there weren't feminism without Quebec libre, so there was it was very tied in. But I must come back to my lesbian Her Story. I must say that the beginning of the filming of Her Story was really like, I was always living with my camera, so in the beginning of the 70s, before even I met the lesbian...
But you always had cats too, didn't you?
Yeah, they were always in front of the camera. I was always filming them too. And so between my little historians watching me and filming Her Story, the lesbians would always see us appear. Suzanne and I, we were you know, we were together since 72, so we were like, it was like a ménage à trois with the camera was the third partner, and so every time we went to dinner, every time there was a party or there was a supper, the lesbians that invited us would always see us appear with the camera. So the first images, I would say the first lesbian TV was really the private, you know. So that started in 73.
Doing lesbian history, what's fascinating is you were doing instinctively with the camera, which is your medium, so to speak. What we urge people to do in doing lesbian history, it really begins with taking photographs of friends, identifying by way of photos, and through friendships and collective gatherings. So in fact, what you were doing was recording spontaneously a record of collective groups.
Yeah, I'm always saying that what I did with my camera is I was recording my diary. I was, instead of using a pen, I was using my camera, but it was my diary, because I'm very egoistic in a sense. I film my whole life. I find my life so so important that I find that everything has to be recorded. I think how I came to do Her Story is that I realized that my life as a lesbian was very important, and I'm always fighting for, I think we have to be visible, and I think all these visuals have to be looked at.
But that's as subjects of our lives. I mean, the analogy is there are some who write, who keep journals, or others who record visually or paint, but they're all modes of expressing a self, which is an ego in one sense, but I think it's a self that's also socialized. Like in your camera, you took it to dinner. So you have, I've seen some of these early videos, you have your friends at dinner, and then the message passes from this private sphere into the actions that grew out of these dinner gatherings, like let's do such and such in a more political sense, possibly. But in doing a history, what's always interesting is urging people to note names of people on photos, to keep their journals, to write, to record a self, but it's a self that can be in community as well. So they're very private gestures, but they have a more public or political significance than we think. So yes, going back to your dinner parties.
But you know, even at dinner parties, what I found interesting is that we even, like, they saw themselves for the first time on TV, because we did more than just record them. We actually brought a monitor or a TV, and they would really look at themselves. And so therefore, it was like, They would be recorded, but they would have the self-image returned to them. I mean, their identity as a lesbian on that TV, because mm-hmm. the talk was, oh, there's a nice lesbian, and we would joke about mm-hmm. how lesbians look good on TV, how they're photogenic, and so mm-hmm. on, you know. And so it created a whole culture around the image, you know. Mm-hmm. But the private, I've always kept up anyway, because I've always lived. So the private, it's not because we weren't political at that mm-hmm. time mm-hmm. that I did not continue my private. It continues all the time. Mm-hmm. I think we need to live around the camera. But I must go along and maybe mention a few of the production that I've done that are important lesbian productions. Of course, recording all that, we did an epic. There is a video called Mémoire de notre histoire, which is excerpts of our lives and our, you know, like there's cultural, there's political events. It's a whole combination, and it started in it started in 1972, and it goes to 1987, and then also we recorded Creating Lesbian Meaning, which are excerpts of Anglophone Lesbian at the Third International Feminist Book Fair. And the thing is, we find the la parole, you know, the word. I mean, we're not used to hearing lesbian thinking or the intelligence mm-hmm. of our thinking or of our philosophy. Mm-hmm. That we film like conferences, but they're integral, you know, they're complete. We do not excerpt away what mm-hmm. people, the paper that people present, because we mm-hmm. find that it's important that we have a record of the whole, you know, not like Radio-Canada, you know, mm-hmm. where they just do voiceover and they cut everything and mm-hmm. whatever you create exists in 1 minute, you know, mm-hmm. but it's hours of thinking and talking that we live sometimes, you know. So Creating Lesbian Nini, I'm just preparing you because it's 4 hours. Mm-hmm. It's a document mm-hmm. that lasts 4 hours.
Bring some popcorn.
Yeah. And then of course we did also Suzanne created she did one we don't do much like exploration, visual exploration. We're more documentary, but we are getting into the fiction now and doing more exploration with our video. We will always be documentary makers, but also we like to do the other version, which we haven't explored much, but we're doing now. She's done one which is an interesting technical creation called Femme. It's about a breakup, but near the ocean, and mm-hmm. it's an interesting exploration of images and effects that she has worked on. And I did one called Carnet de Bar, which is on the nightlife in lesbian bars in Labyrinth, which does not exist now, and the Lilith in the 80s. And that's more, it's like a cartoon actually, because it's all the behaviors of lesbians, you know, how they behave and mm-hmm. but I did it in animated form, so you see dozens of girls, the way they drink, the way they smoke, the way they smile, the way they seduce, the way they dance, and it's like a sort of interesting visual exploration that again.
And now I know Suzanne Vertu also created Riposte.
Yes, it's a video on the Montreal Polytechnique massacre that occurred on the 6th of December 1989. And it's the video occurred. I mean, there was, you know, like the media took over so much that the feminists did not find their space to express how they felt and what they thought of what happened with such great violence. And so lesbians and feminists gathered and organized an evening to be able to speak out how they felt on the 13th of December. Media were invited, but we said it would be an evening for women, among women and lesbians, and a very few response from the mainstream media came. But Suzanne came with her camera and recorded everything that was spoken that night, the emotions, the thinking, the feedback. Mm-hmm. And Riposte, it's mainly lesbians that have spoken that evening, but there are a few feminists, but I consider it more of a lesbian mm-hmm. document than mm-hmm. A feminist document.
Yeah, but I actually haven't seen the video several times. I think it's quite brilliant in that it's evident that a lesbian perspective was much more sensitive to the fact that the murders at the Polytechnique was a political murder, and that there wasn't an equivocation that these were murders of students, which is a sort of gender-free term, but this was murder of women and part of a femicide and violence worldwide. So I think that Suzanne's vision is quite clarifying, and that brings us back to the power of the visual or words to name name the reality. And so I think what's interesting in all the films that you've, the videos you've created with Suzanne and the others who've worked with Reza Vidal, is always opening up a vista of what is really happening, whether it's in relations, I mean, whether it's Suzanne's vision of a breakup, or I know you've created quite a number of films on various passions and desires and political passions as well, yes. But I think what's interesting for a historian is that there's underneath this, there is a philosophy and an ethic that is lesbian. There is a sort of a word and image that's particularly sympathetic to a female universe. Now the question is, what else were you going to speak about?
Well, I think I'll wrap up with my last production and may say a few words about what I want to do or what I'm working on my next scripts. But I wanted to say that I did. I have a very controversial video that is floating around in the community right now that is called "Orgasme à la crème fouettée," and I think since as a videomaker for the past 20 years, filming my life, filming everything that was political or cultural, everything that happened, most of it, I tried. I cannot pretend to say that I filmed everything, but there are a lot of fragments that I did catch. It came after the, I guess 1989, the last festival, Imagination, we saw a lot of video on sex, and somehow I was sort of dissatisfied with the stuff that I saw, and I didn't sort of see myself up there, my sexuality. And so we were challenged, my girlfriend and I, at that time, to do one. So why criticize? You know, there's room for new stuff, there's always room for something new, you know. And so I made one. I made it's a sex video. But it was scary. I mean, because I'm considered like a radical activist in the community, mm-hmm. in the French lesbian community, and you know, always being behind the camera, and well, sometimes in front because I live with the camera, and of course I do get in front of it.
But now and then you have a girlfriend, a blonde.
Tu veux dire que je suis toujours devant la caméra with a blonde? Mm. No, not really. Yeah, I have them all recorded. Mm-hmm. That's another video. That
that'll be
make.
Your 50th.
Yeah, and I'll open the parentheses. I want to do for my 50th birthday a video on all my friends and all my lovers as a tribute to the people that are and have been
lives.
In my life, because I find it important. And so that's a project I have to start, because I'm going to be 49 this year. Jeez, I only have 1 year, but I want to do that.
Well, that'll be quite interesting to see everyone over time as well.
I know.
Because you have those
yeah.
early videos
yeah.
from bringing yeah, the from the video 70s. To dinner.
Yeah.
And then you'll have the catch up.
Yeah. I guess I'll do a before and after type of thing. Some of them I'll probably record mm-hmm. at my birthday party and have them as they are today.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's.
But let me just note that a lot of lesbians do celebrate the 50th. I mean, it becomes a communal rite. There are a number of rites of passage of sorts, and this is because I've spoken with a number who've celebrated in a variety of ways. And yours obviously will be visual again.
Some of them said it would be long.
Yeah, that's right. Well, where were we now, Diane? I was freely associating. And
I'm trying to say that to me, Orgasme was an important video to make because in the community, it broke the silence about sexuality. I think sex is really mm-hmm. important. And it, you know, I filmed everything else. Why not my sexuality? It was easy to film, and but it was freaky to think that everybody would see my ass up there. You know, like mm-hmm. The whole community. I was afraid. It's mm-hmm. It's the hardest thing I
yes.
think to do to shoot your intimacy in front of your friends and people that you sort of vaguely know and strangers that are in your community. I could go anywhere else in the world, and I don't care because I feel like I'm a stranger. But mm-hmm. here it was. It was scary, But strangely enough, now I'm detached from that. I mean, it doesn't matter if I show my video now, and I know some people love it, some people mm-hmm. hate it, and I get a lot of feedback. And I know every time I say orgasm, I'll say, oh, that's the most talked video about, and it goes on, and they're, you know.
Well, I know from being at several screenings, Dan, that there's a sort of a context as well, in that you've been insistent, of course, that it's for lesbians only. So in your own community, it is a sense of... the intimacy that the video allows, but as well you have been in a way conscious of for whose eyes, for what purpose and for whose eyes. And I think the origin of it, while watching other lesbian sex, supposed sex videos, I think I was sitting next to you at one of them when we said we had lived better in our relations, but with others, that is. But I think the point about orgasm was it did provoke questions that are not about, particularly about, they're about taboos on sexuality. So we were speaking about orgasm and the trailers that you have running through orgasm, the film, the video, which raise wry humor but political questions. Could you tell us some of them, some of the trailers and why you put them in?
Well, there was, I think it starts with, can you be political and sexual? Mm-hmm. Because there is there's some lesbians that are very anti-sexuality, or they have a lot of taboo about sexuality, mm-hmm. and they're very serious. And some of them, and some other lesbians, have actually said that they are political lesbians, but they do not have, it's not by sexual choice, and therefore don't have any sexuality. Anyway, we just wanted to mm-hmm. raise the question, because there seems to be a variety of people, mm-hmm. What they live as lesbians, and what their sexuality is, and some don't, and mm-hmm. some do have sexuality. Mm-hmm. So it was just to raise that question.
Mm-hmm. There was another part of the video that's quite interesting, because it may come up as a topic later on in the day at CKUT's Lesbian Gay Day, which is you did quite a lot with lesbian safe sex, which a lot was playful, like saran wrap in the shower, I'm reminded. But there really was a scene where it's almost a how-to use a dental dam, which I haven't quite adapted. But I recall we discussed this the other day with some other lesbians who may be on today, and we were talking about how our sexuality now is affected by AIDS in the community. And the question now of not just of partnering, but what we do in our relations. And maybe you'd like to speak about how you brought that safe sex part in.
Well, actually, it actually started because it was real, like, because Patricia had herpes on her, on her lips. And that was the part of the saran wrap. We didn't have any safe sex thing, and so we started talking about it, what happens, and then there was if we had an infection, mm-hmm. what would we do, and mm-hmm. and so we started really getting into it, that it was important that we be conscious of it, and a lot of lesbians have come up to me and said, gee, I never knew I heard of dental, but I never knew what to do. And so when Patricia does her teacher mm-hmm. Thing about you cut up the condom and you put it like that and you use it, we do the whole demonstration. Mm-hmm. I found it was part of mm-hmm. that video was, let's share information also. Let's be,
Let me just say that if people are interested in further information about the 1992 conference, they can contact Robert Martin at the Department of English at Concordia University, 7141 Sherbrooke Street West, Montreal, H4B1R6, or myself at the Department of History at the University of Quebec at Montreal, postal code 8888, station A, Montreal, H3C3P8, or Lynn Chamberlain and the Department of Sociology at Cégep de Maisonneuve, 3800 Sherbrooke, Montreal, H1X2A2, or Laurier Lacroix, Département d'Histoire de l'Art at UQAM. And for contact with Réseau Vidéo, because you do some rentals as well as sales of your videos, mm-hmm, Diane. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so while we're in addresses and phone number, I'll give the address. La Réseau Vidéo, I suppose you wonder how it's written. I think I'll spell it for you. It's VIDE. And then there's a hyphen LELL. It's a spook on Videl, the life of her. Mm-hmm. The address is 4013 Rue Désirable, Désirable, Maple Leaf. D-E-S, E-R-A-B-L-E-S, Montreal, H2K3V7, and the phone number is 525-8456.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Deanne. So for wrapping up on our discussion today, I'm very happy that we both came together here at CKUT to celebrate Lesbian Gay Day, the third annual. And we can look forward, I'm sure, to the more video production. I know you always have a project and travels planned.
Well, I think I wish we could do a little cartoon today, remember, Elaine? Every time Elaine and I find ourselves somewhere, there's a cartoon popping up in our hands.
Yeah.
And, you know, after I've done Organza and I've seen how popular eroticism is strong in the lesbian community, mm-hmm. and how humor is strong, I mean, that's where I want to do a few little video cartoons on these topics, and that's what I'm working on now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's I'm very pleased to have shared the energy you helped to create, Deanne, and we want to wish all of you...
Enterprise herself as a black lesbian poet. She's published 7 collections of poetry. Her latest is No Language is Neutral. And it was nominated for the Governor General's Award. She has also published short stories and essays, and she wrote the script for the National Film Board film called Older, Stronger, Wise. She's currently working on a book of oral history of black working women and is just completing her PhD in women's history. She was recently hired full-time by the University of Guelph's English department and will be starting winter 92. So, although her work deals with people and identities that have historically been marginalized in Canadian culture, Bran refuses to consider herself on the margins of Canadian literature. She says, "I don't consider myself on any margin." Ron, would you cut that out? I'm sorry. He's misbehaving. It's gay day. I don't consider myself on any margin. I'm sitting right in the middle of black literature, and because that's who I read, that's who I respond to. In November, she read at Waterloo University. I'm sorry. There are some beautiful women at Waterloo. Here are 2 excerpts from that reading from her latest book, No Language is Neutral. So this is Dionne Brand.
The first one, which is a poem that I kind of always start out with. I happened upon this photograph of a woman who had been a slave in America, and she was 115 years old when the photograph was taken, and I was deeply struck by the photograph and by my connection to her as my presence in this part of the world called the Americas owes so much to her. And so it's called Blue Spiritual for Mammy Prater. On looking at the photograph of Mammy Prater, an ex-slave 115 years old when her photograph was taken, she waited for her century to turn. She waited until she was 115 years old to take a photograph, to take a photograph and to put those eyes in it. She waited until the technique of photography was suitably developed to make sure the picture would be clear, to make sure no crude daguerreotype would lose her image, would lose her lines, and most of all her eyes and her hands. She knew the patience of 115 years. She knew that if she had the patience to avoid killing a white man, that I would see this photograph. She waited until it suited her to take this photograph and to put those eyes in it. In the 115 years which it took her to wait for this photograph, she perfected this pose. She sculpted it over a shoulder of pain, a thing like despair, which she never called this name, for she would not have lasted. The fields, the ones she plowed on the days that she was a mule, left their etching on the gate of her legs, deliberately and unintentionally. She waited, not always silently, not always patiently, for this self-portrait. By the time she sat in her black dress, white collar, white handkerchief, her feet had turned to marble. Her heart burnished red, and her eyes. She waited 115 years until the science of photography passed tin and talbotype for a surface sensitive enough to hold her eyes. She took care not to lose the signs, to write in those eyes what her fingers could not script, a pact of blood across a century, a decade, and more. She knew that it would be me who would find her will, her meticulous account, her eyes, her days when waiting for this photograph was all that kept her sane. She planned it down to the day, the light, the superfluous photographer, her breasts, her hands, this moment of my turning the leaves of a book, noticing her eyes. And this poem is about lesbian sensuality. Okay. It's from the section of the book called Hard Against the Soul. I want to wrap myself around you in this line so that you will know something. Not just that I am dying in some way, but that I did this for some reason. This grace, you see, come as a surprise. And nothing till now knock on my teeming skull. Then these warm, watery syllables. A woman's tongue, so like a culture, plunging toward stones not yet made. Plunging toward stones not yet formed into flesh, language not yet made. I want to kiss you deeply, smell, taste the warm water of your mouth, as warm as your hands. I lucky is grace that gather me up and forgive my plainness. And just one more. She was a woman whose eyes came fresh saying, I trust you. You will not be the woman who walks out into the Atlantic at Santa Maria and never returns. You cannot dream this turquoise ocean enveloping you in its murmuring thrall. Your hands will not arrest in the middle of gazing. You will not happen on an easy thought like this in a hotel room in Guanabo. Not on a morning as you watch alone from this beach, the sun dripping orange, or sitting on a marble bench in old Havana vacantly. You will not look at your watch on a night in early June and think this gentle sea as good as any for a walk beyond the reflexes of your flesh. And four, you can hardly hear my voice now, woman, but I heard you in my ear for many years to come, the pink tongue of a great shell murmuring and yawning, muttering tea, wood, bread, she, blue, stroking these simple names of habit. Sweeter and as common as night crumbling black flakes of conversation to a sleep, repetitious as noons and snow up north. Your hoarse and throaty, I told you, no milk, clean up. You can hardly hear my voice, but I heard you in my sleep, big as waves, reciting their prayers so hourly the heart rocks to its real meaning, saying, we must make a sense here to living. This allegiance is as flesh to bone, but older, and look, love, there are no poems to this, only triangles, scraps, prisons of purpled cloth. Time begins with these gestures. This sudden silence needs words instead of whispering. You can hardly hear my voice by now, but, woman, I felt your breath against my cheek in years to come. As losing my sight in night's black pause, I trace the pearl of your sweat to morning, turning as you turn, breast to breast's mute prose, we arc a leaping. And no more may have passed here, except also the map to coming home, the tough geography of trenches, quarrels, placards, barricades. And this last poem is for my first lover. It's called For Faith. It is not sufficient here to mark the skin's water or fold, the back soft, the neck secret, the lips purpled. She startled me just last night. I heard her singing and could not dance. I heard her navigate the thick soil of who we are, her boundless black self rising, honeying. Thank you.
My name is Ian, and with me I have Ron and Heather. They have come back, and they have come back to us to talk specifically about the issue of bisexuality. It's a big one. It's a big one, it is.
It's a biggie and it's a littlie. It's kind of both at the same time. But I just felt like addressing it today because, I mean, I was really involved, and really involved in the gay and lesbian community, this past winter I started dating a man, and things kind of changed for me in terms of my relationship with, like, basically the lesbian community.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I would assume that it would have been a negative change.
Yes and no. I mean, I don't want to, like, kind of dump on people or anything, mm-hmm. but, my phone rang a little bit less often in terms of being invited, you know, to, like, lesbian functions and stuff. I mean, that has since pretty much changed, and I don't know if it was a product of how I was feeling. You know, I don't know if people were, like, kind of,
mm-hmm.
you know, feeding off that, but, things did change, and it really, you know, kind of screwed me up for a while, but, because, I mean, I'm still, you know, with the same guy, whatever, and I'm kind of dating him, because even when I was involved in the lesbian community, I would occasionally, I still am involved, but when I was considering myself strictly lesbian, I would occasionally sleep with a man, but it was always just like a one-night thing, or for diversity, or whatever, just mm-hmm. to have a good time, and I never considered even dating a man until, I mean, I've dated men, whatever, when I'm single, mm-hmm. and so on, but until, you know, Tony came along.
Mr. Special.
Mr. Special. He's one of two cool straight men in the city.
I know him, and I would tend to agree. I don't know the other one.
You know the other one, yeah.
I do, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are, in my mind, you know, very few, but in a lot of ways I know the boy that you're talking about, and that boy seems to me that he is almost gay in a way, not in a sexual way, but in a lot of his sort of behavioral patterns and
right.
those sort of, which might identify someone as a gay man. Tony tends to share a lot of those things. But anyway, let's have something from Ron.
Well, I mean, I'm hardly an expert on bisexuality. I mean, for all intents and purposes, I'm not bisexual. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, we're not experts. It's not like, you know, if you have the following symptoms, you are a bisexual.
Please call 390.
It's just that I've seen that there's a lot less acceptance, you know, for people of the bisexual persuasion, you know, both in a gay and lesbian community and also in a, you know, quote unquote straight community. There seems to be people want to pawn you off to the other side, you know, and it gets into that whole question. I mean, it's been said over and over again, but it gets into the whole question of labels, you know, of labeling mm-hmm. someone mm-hmm. specifically homosexual or specifically heterosexual, and why is that, you know, and why is there less acceptance? I was reading, it's a pretty dated book, I mean, Loving Someone Gay, and it talks a little bit about, you know, gay, straight, or bi, mm-hmm. and it says, you know, if the homosexual is considered a freak by society, which, you know, it the homosexual is considered a freak, the mm-hmm. bisexual is like a super freak.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's interesting because we talk about, when we're talking about labels, the labels are very different, and the labels come from very different places. There's the label of homosexuality, there's the label of heterosexuality, and there's the label of bisexuality, which to me all seem to sort of fit in the same realm of, it's a very medical type of thing, it's a very sort of social type of label based on behavior patterns, and it's a very sort of clinical type of thing. Then you start to get into the labels like gay, lesbian, which are names that generally we've given ourselves, mm-hmm. and in that sense I think they're attached to a political agenda, and in a way calling yourself gay as opposed to a homosexual is something of a political statement.
Right.
Whereas bisexual people, there really has been not been a specifically bisexual political movement unless
right.
it's been a part of the gay and lesbian movement. And I think that judging by last summer, which was an interesting time in a lot of ways, but particularly in terms of the labels that were attached to the movement that happened last summer, very clearly early on it was a gay and lesbian movement, despite the fact that it was not a gay and lesbian party. And prior to the problems with the police, I don't think most people would have called it a gay and lesbian party, but afterwards people certainly called it a gay and lesbian party. But there was a lot of bisexuals there was a lot of straight people there, and they were never included as being sort of members, really. It was never even, it was the Gay and Lesbian Coalition Against Violence, or LGV, Lesbians and Gays Against Violence. There's nobody else allowed in there.
Yeah.
But can I, to be honest, I was there the day the title LGV was born. I helped to create just that name last summer. And I mean, at that time, I wasn't going to add a B for bisexual. You know what I mean? I felt like a lesbian. You know what I mean? I was, you know, I put in the big L, you know.
But you see, there you go.
I chose that name, you know what I mean? Just still being the same person. I mean, it's just a name and the whole thing.
Yes, but I think that maybe due to events that have happened in your life since then, you obviously become a lot more aware of how perhaps bisexuals are more alienated. I hate these words, like alienated, persecuted, but they are sort of... I mean, if gays and lesbians are a non-visible minority, I think bisexuality is even more non-visible, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, like, it's acceptance by whom, you know what I mean, kind of thing, that becomes an issue. Because I felt really alienated from the straight world when I was sort of living totally a lesbian life, okay? I even felt alienated from some lesbians. I mean, everyone feels, you know, because I was into casual sex and so on, and some people, you know, kind of whatever, are more into relationships than that. God, I sound like a nerdhead. No, but no, but it's like I felt alienated from the straight community. Like, I would go to work, for example, and have to lie, and people thought I wasn't dating and this and that, because, you know, I didn't feel that it was appropriate to come out, you know, at my place of work and so on. And so I felt alienated, whereas I felt very real and very, you know, together and very part of the lesbian community. And so it's almost like a trade-off, and now that I'm dating a man, I can go to work and talk, you know, shallow, blah, 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 oh, my boyfriend this, my boyfriend that, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to talking realness in the lesbian community with my friends, you know, at parties and so on, no one asks, you know, or the odd, you know, how's your male lover? And, you know, fine. They don't want to hear about anything else, you know, kind of thing.
How do you see yourself fitting into sort of, I'll call it a queer community, you know, like, how do you see yourself fitting into the gay and lesbian community, and how... Not just, like, where do you put yourself, but how do you feel other people place you?
You see, I think people place you where they want you to be placed. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm talking to straight friends who are fairly cool and know I'm bi, they still see me as mostly straight, and then I was dabbling with girls. Girls will see it that I'm just dabbling with a boy.
Right.
People put you where they want to put you.
Right.
Yeah, people see...
So you have to make your own space.
But it is kind of... it is really sort of an in-between type of thing. At least in our society, it's a very in-between type of thing, because there is a fairly established gay and lesbian community, and people would differ as to the degree of establishment, etc., etc. And there is obviously a very established straight society. But there really isn't much of an in-between. I mean, you look at sort of the type of gay and lesbian society we have, and it's a fairly exclusionary type of thing, whether that's people's choice or not. You know, it's not sort of frequented by a lot of bisexuals, and bisexuality, I think, is a very problematic thing, because in some ways it comes down to who you are sleeping with, which
at
defines
the present moment,
where you fit in. I mean,
exactly.
If you're a homosexual,
then
you perhaps are sleeping with people of the same sex. If you're a heterosexual, then it's someone of the different sex. But bisexuality, where does it fit in? Because as a bisexual, there are times when you, in a sense, will be a heterosexual, and times, in a sense, when you will be a homosexual.
Right.
So it's an interesting lifestyle to try and define. Out of the bisexuals, do you find them to be less political on the grounds of sort of the sexual orientation movement?
I don't know, because, like, some people I know that are bisexual consider themselves primarily, let's say, lesbian. Like, I know some lesbians that won't admit that they sleep with men, you know what I mean, or have, or once in a while dabble, or this and that, because it is such a, you know, political issue and stuff. So, I mean, people that really involved in the movement are... identify themselves either as gay or straight, you know what I mean?
Really, you think so? I keep thinking most people that I think would identify themselves as bisexual, you know, taking out, like, fags who sleep with women or lesbians who sleep with men, identify them straight as bisexual with, like, a straight...
bent.
Yeah, like, more straight. I mean, you know, we have one friend who is bisexual, and she's more or less straight, but still I find that
sure.
she's very involved. I think maybe not as political as some people. I mean, everyone has a different degree of politicization, but I find these people, you know, I find that the
those.
People that are bisexual that I know are as political as anyone else that I know, and do show up at, you know, I...
That's good. Well, I mean, that's really
okay.
what we're fighting for.
But I want to make one last point.
But that's in terms of gay and lesbian politics, you know?
No,
like
I think that's what everybody is fighting for, to a certain... When you get down to basics, you're fighting for a society that is more accepting of those
okay,
types of things. And the
one
first
one
should be that men can be attracted to women and men can be attracted to men and women can be doing the whole deal, you know?
Yes.
Let's get the whole crisscross.
Okay, but about acceptance and, like, you know, the gay community not wanting to accept you as strictly lesbian or whatever, I think it's a lot of it is self-protection. I don't mean to say people label you and try and fit you into a hole. It's also self-protection. You know, lesbians are afraid to get involved with me because they're afraid...